Welcome to the American Ag Network Week in Review for August 4th. I'm Sabrina Hill. In just a moment, Rusty Halverson talks with North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp. But first, he joins us with the week's top news.
Dairy foods maker Land O'Lakes on Wednesday said its second quarter profit tumbled 40% as recent tariffs take their toll on U.S. farmers. Land O'Lakes, one of the largest U.S. producers of butter and cheese, reported net income of $67.2 million for the quarter. That was down from $113 million a year ago. U.S. cheese manufacturers have cut prices to preserve their export business, and dairy prices have whipsawed widely since the tariffs were announced and enacted in recent months. A $12 million second quarter loss reported by agricultural trader Bunge was partly the product of a wrong-way bet on improving trade relations between the U.S. and China. To protect its profits, Bunge put on futures positions. But as the U.S.-China trade picture soured further, so did soybean prices, meaning that Bunge's positions lost money. As Washington and Beijing struggle to break a trade impasse, some administration advisors are urging the president to raise the stakes, some pushing the president to apply 25% tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese imports, up from the original proposal for 10%. The White House won't make a final decision until late August. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue says the aid package for U.S. farmers unveiled by the White House will see dollars start to flow to farmers by late September and into October. He signaled that around $8 billion would be the amount paid out to farmers, with another $200 million for trade promotion efforts. That would leave around $4 billion for the purchase of surplus commodities from the market. Secretary Perdue echoing the comments that the aid package is only temporary.
I liken it to really kind of any insurance claim, to be honest. If a farmer sees a $2 drop in soybean prices, then they should not necessarily expect a $2 per bushel mitigation payment. I think that's what we're trying to say.
The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver will hear a renewable fuel standard lawsuit challenging EPA's issuance of small refinery waivers. After the court ruled on Friday of last week, it is the proper venue. At the end of May, the Renewable Fuels Association, National Corn Growers Association, American Coalition for Ethanol, and National Farmers Union sued EPA on three recent waivers granted, arguing the agency did not publish in the Federal Register what were final agency actions. EPA Acting Administrator Andrew Wheeler was on the hot seat during a hearing of the Senate's Environment and Public Works Committee on Wednesday. Senators asking Wheeler about the small refinery exemptions that the EPA granted from the RFS during the watch of Scott Pruitt.
If I could start by saying that we are working to provide more transparency around the small refinery program, the exemption program. We're creating a dashboard where we will publicize all the information about when we grant a waiver and circumstances around the waiver. We have to balance that with the confidential business information of the impacted companies. But we're working to try to be more transparent on that side of the program. And we're looking to see what we can do as far as making up the difference when we have to grant a waiver from the 15 billion gallons.
South Dakota Senator Mike Brown said he sent a letter to Pruitt about the topic, but didn't get a satisfactory response.
I have yet to receive a substantive response to the letter as requested. And this is an issue which is of serious consequence to my constituents in South Dakota and throughout the upper Midwest. Would you commit to reviewing this request and responding to it in a substantive manner?
Yes, Senator, I will do that.
The Senate agreed by voice vote on Tuesday to go to conference with the House to negotiate a new version of the Farm Bill before the current legislation expires, even if it means working through the summer recess. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying Tuesday he was hopeful the Farm Bill conference report would be ready for a vote after Labor Day. The Senate naming 9 negotiators, 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats. The House naming 47 conferees, 29 Republicans and 18 Democrats. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley telling reporters this week he'll crash the party if he has to.
We've been told last week and this week that we're going to get to conference on the Farm Bill. And that's something that the leader has said, and every time I heard it, it was expressed with confidence. I assume that if they only have 9 people on the conference, I won't be a member of the conference because I'm 6th in seniority. So it's 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats. But I'm going to go to conference whether I'm on the conference or not because we got to get a farm bill.
A Mississippi poultry supplier will pay $3.75 million to Hispanic workers, ending an 8-year legal fight. Koch Foods of Mississippi agreeing to settle a lawsuit filed by 11 workers at its Morton plant. The lawsuit's asserting that Koch Foods subjected Hispanic and female employees to a hostile work environment and retaliated against complaints. Livestock traders can't wait for school to start. Red meat prices have struggled amid record production, with pork prices falling and beef drifting around its seasonal lows. The beef market, in particular, often struggles after the 4th of July as the demand for heavier foods wane in the height of summer. It's left to school children to come to the rescue, boosting prices as parents and USDA buy up meat for lunchboxes in the fall. And a Vermont airport is displaying 7-foot-tall maple syrup jugs to remind travelers they can buy the state's staple online instead of losing it at security when their liquids get confiscated. The replicas are not edible. An airport spokeswoman estimating if the 150-gallon jugs were filled, the maple syrup inside would be worth more than 10 grand. I'm Rusty Halverson.
South Dakota is looking for your used pesticide containers. Here's Kristen Rall with the story.
The South Dakota Department of Agriculture encourages all agricultural producers and businesses to take advantage of the free pesticide container recycling collections in 37 locations from across the state from July 9th until September 6th. Recycling is the preferred way of disposal. This way, containers are removed from the solid waste stream and the discarded materials can be reused. Spike King, in charge of the Waste Pesticide and Container Recycling Program, explains.
Right now, we actually collect all sizes of containers, but the 37 sites that we have set up, we just take 5-gallon and smaller. We come around with portable granulator, and we actually granulate the jugs right on site, and we just wouldn't have room to haul all the larger containers. So we just do the small ones.
The recycled containers are ground up and sent to a facility where the plastic is often used to make drain tiles, speed bumps, and fence posts. Like Spike mentioned, only 2.5-gallon containers or smaller are accepted in those 37 locations. As for the larger containers, what should farmers do with those, Spike?
As far as that goes, if it's the containers they're looking to get rid of, they can bring them to one of the sites we have. We have quite a few show up with horse trailers full of containers when we're grinding. If it's more than that, they can contact the Department of Ag and they'll get in touch with me, and we can set up a time and a date to stop and pick them up there.
Spike wants to remind you, before you bring your containers, labels must be removed and containers must be triple or pressure rinsed to remove contaminants. As far as this year's numbers and amounts collected, King says.
Right now, as far as pounds, we've actually collected about 60,000 pounds and the container is about 0.8 of a pound. So we've probably collected 80,000 right now so far this year, and we're just getting a good start.
For a full schedule of container pickup times and locations, visit the South Dakota Department of Agriculture's website. I'm Kirsten Rall for the American Ag Network.
We go back to Rusty Halverson now with an interview with North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp.
Well, the Senate agreed by voice vote on Tuesday to go to conference with the House, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying he's hopeful that the Farm Bill conference report would be ready for a vote after Labor Day. And from what I understand, you are one of the select few that has been picked to serve on that conference committee for the Senate. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm honored to be selected. Really, almost ahead of my rank. It gave me an opportunity to represent North Dakota on this very important committee as we're looking at our farm economy challenged not because of weather or crops, but because of policies coming out of Washington D.C. I think it's critically important that the Great Plains have a voice and that North Dakota has a voice. And because I'm on the Senate Ag Committee, I'll be a full participant on the conference committee, so there isn't a provision that I can't vote on. And so this is a very, very important position for North Dakota, a very important time for agriculture, and I'm honored to be asked and look forward to serving on the conference committee.
Okay, now the House named 47 conferees, 29 Republicans, 18 Democrats, 9 conferees for the Senate. It's speculation, but do you think they're trying to stack the deck in their favor for the GOP-backed revisions in the House bill on SNAP changes? What do you need to see to support the conference report and get a bipartisan bill passed through Congress?
Well, I think that when you look at stacking the deck, they don't get any bigger vote, you know. And one of the things about the House conferees is they didn't just name them from the Ag Committee; they named them from other committees, and the jurisdiction of those members, if they come from like the Science and Technology Committee, it's limited to only those things that are in the Farm Bill that touch the jurisdiction of their committee. And so, if you want a comparison, look at the conferees that came from the House Ag Committee, and those are the ones I'm sure who will be doing the bulk of the negotiating and the bulk of the discussion. And so what I anticipate, we each side has one vote, and we're going to move this thing forward. I think that there's going to be at least hopefully some meaningful discussion on what we do with the nutrition title, which is where the SNAP adjustments are. We have a number of people in North Dakota who have been contacting us, including both the Lutheran and the Catholic bishop, talking about the importance of food security and making sure that we have an appropriate safety net to avoid hunger in North Dakota. And so we take that job seriously. I've never been someone who said we should take the nutrition title out of the Farm Bill. I think it would be virtually impossible to get a Farm Bill passed. So I expect nutrition's going to be part of it. There'll be some tweaking on the commodity title. We're proud of the work that we did, but you know, you should always listen and look at other ideas. I think that you're going to see, hopefully a smooth process that will lead to a bipartisan bill that we can, in fact, get across the finish line in both the House and the Senate.
Okay, speaking of commodities, shifting gears now, the big debate in the world of soybeans is whether demand from other countries can replace China if that country stays away from the U.S. market. On this Wednesday, soybean futures were backpedaling from multi-week highs after we had a big rally on Tuesday. It seems the trade tensions are flaring back up. Some advisors in the White House reportedly are debating whether to increase the proposed tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods to 25% rather than 10%. It's almost like we take a step forward and two steps back on this entire topic.
Well, the first question that you asked is, can the rest of the world replace the Chinese market? The answer is no, it cannot. We continue to work to grow our market, and I know the Soybean Export Council works very hard, but we spent literally millions of dollars in trade promotion to get the Chinese market. And two out of every three rows of soybeans go to the east, to Asia, most of which goes to China and North Dakota. We don't have access to the European markets in North Dakota, and that's going to have an incredible result on basis. And I'm sure you're hearing, as I'm hearing, is that it's awfully hard to sell a unit train of soybeans right now. We're hearing it not just from the elevators, but we're hearing it from the people who move the beans. And so, my concern is that not only, I mean, if we're able to help farmers' cash flow with an influx of cash, which incidentally we borrowed, the $12 billion, which is borrowed, put on our kids' tab. But and I'm not opposing it, I'm simply saying that we need to be realistic about where that money came from. And if we're able to actually get this logjam, broken so that we can, in fact, once again access the Chinese market, will that Chinese market be there, number one? And number two, what's going to happen with 2 years' worth of crop that's going to be stored in North Dakota? It is time to stop taking one step forward and two back, and it's time to just say we're going to de-escalate, we're going to get to the table. And after today's announcement that the administration is considering 25% tariffs on 200 billion $1 billion, the Chinese reaction has been to harden their position, not soften their position. And so the one statistic that I think it's important, because people think, well, China is going to have to come to the table. American exports, Chinese exports to the United States is about 3% of their gross domestic product. So, you know, let's not overemphasize the role that American exports play in the Chinese market.
Yeah, absolutely. And the White House really tried to make some hay when they had the EU leaders last week and saying they had agreed to buy more soybeans. But a report out today from the EU Commission showed that 37% of that bloc soybean imports last month were coming from the U.S., even before this announcement. And that compares with 9% in July 2017. So trying to take credit for something that's already going in the direction that it has been going, it seems.
Well, sure, and the other thing about the EU is I think they definitely need to sit down and talk to the EU, sit down and talk to Canada and to Mexico. You know, we're hoping and continue to have ongoing dialogue with Ambassador Lighthizer, who is our chief trade negotiator. But the bottom line is, for right now, when you look at this crop year and you look at our biggest challenge right now, because NAFTA's still in effect, our biggest trade black cloud on the horizon is the Chinese tariffs and the aluminum and steel tariffs, for which we've been retaliated against in agricultural products. You know, the story, we can talk about soybeans, but, you know, I think one of the things that I always mention is, you know, talk to a pork producer. Because they've been hit not only with the Chinese tariffs, but all the retaliation on the steel and aluminum tariffs. And so I'm deeply concerned about ongoing the liquidity of our markets. And by that I mean, how fluid are they, and how likely is it that we're going to recover 100% when all is said and done here? And, you know, there's been no mystery in terms of my position on this. I think tariffs are not in any way a good trade tool for the president to assert. I think sitting down and negotiating and having a discussion, laying out what, in fact, you think you can fix, and then furthermore, working with our allies. And I go back to the first decision that was made by this administration, which was to pull us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to pull us out of TPP, where we could have leveraged with our allies a much better trade negotiation with China, but we're not in the TPP.
Absolutely.
And so that has opened up a huge crack for China to exploit our markets, in fact, in those other areas. And when you look at what China's doing, China right now is negotiating a regional trade alliance that they think will be done by the end of the year with our Pacific partners.
Absolutely. Well said. Anything else, Senator, before I let you go? I've had you on the phone here for about 10 minutes so far.
Well, what I would say is one of the things that the administration could do would be open up E15. And there's been a lot of talk about E15, but one of the, and I would caution people, one of the things that you may hear is that, oh, well, we offered you E15 and we didn't take it. That's because they in the offer of E15, they may have blocked out E20 or E30. And so we're going to continue to work to improve the markets for our ethanol industry. You can see, our two big cash crops, soybeans and corn. A lot of people planted soybeans thinking that was going to be the best option. Now they got caught up in a trade war. Corn continues to also struggle because of loss of market.
Yeah, one thing, Andrew Wheeler, the acting administrator of the EPA, he appeared before the Senate Public Environment and Public Works Committee today, and he essentially promised better transparency when it comes to those small refinery waivers. That's got to be at least encouraging to hear.
Well, it is, and I actually know Andrew from his previous life when he was doing some work in the private sector, and so I asked him to come in and just sit down and visit with me, and we had a very frank discussion about the waivers that EPA has granted. We're concerned, you know, we told them about the numbers. We said, you guys can publish all the volume numbers you want, but if you're exempting people from the requirement out the back door with no transparency, that's not a deal that we're willing to take. And I think that there's been a number of organizations that have sued the EPA because of these waivers. We continue to look at this litigation as adding potentially additional leverage. But you know, we cannot. I mean, it's tough enough. It's hard because when you look at the crops, and I've driven around North Dakota now all summer, and every place that there hasn't been hail, it's beautiful. It's incredible. It would make any farm girl smile. But I tell you, you know, when I see once it comes off and see the diminished value, not because we haven't worked hard to protect our markets, but because of policies in Washington, D.C. that don't recognize that farmers are an incredibly important part of our overall economy. And when they don't do well, it's not good for the country. And let's not forget that our wealth comes from what we extract and grow, and farmers are the best at it in the world. We brew these markets, we want to keep these markets, and we've got to help farmers be successful.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your time on this Wednesday, Senator, and safe travels as you do crisscross the state. We appreciate your time today.
It's a beautiful state. There's nothing better than traveling North Dakota in the summer.
Yeah, it's a little cool today, but it's going to be warming up into the weekend again.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Take care.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.